The Piano Matters is supported by Jacobs Music in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, the area representative of Steinway & Sons for new and previously owned Steinway pianos. More information is available at jacobsmusic.com. This is The Piano Matters. I'm your programmer and host, David Dubal. And I wish you well, and I'm inviting you to a banquet of great piano playing. Listen to the King of Instruments. It should be a great program, and I have for you a couple of Chopin etudes in comparison. We haven't done those in a while. Samuel Barber's Fugue in comparison. The Scherzo from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony for two pianos, in the list transcription, of course, and more, much more from the piano. And for me, at least, it is the King of Instruments. Ralph Vaughan Williams said, "It takes perhaps 1,000 poor musicians to produce one virtuoso." Let's begin our show with four Brahms waltzes from his Opus 39, 16 of them. We'll hear number 1, number 3, number 7, and the famous one in A-flat number 15. The 2003 winner of the Leeds competition, Antti Soralla, is our pianist.
Thank you.
Finnish pianist Antti Saralla in Four Waltzes by Brahms. And it seemed that if you lived in Vienna, the spirit of the waltz was upon you. It surely was on Brahms. I've been neglecting comparative performances, but they do breed judgment, and that is an important thing to have. Samuel Barber, in 1949, wrote a very special sonata in E-flat minor, four laconic movements that became the rage, really, of so many American pianists. They all tried it. The piece was actually composed for Horowitz, who gave it its premiere in Havana, Cuba. You could go there easily then. Well, it's a celebrated, very famous recording that Barber once told me he never got over it. We're not going to have Horowitz, though, but his pupil, the late Coleman Bloomfield, and we're going to hear him in the Barber Fugue. Thank you. Coleman Bloomfield died a couple of years ago. It's probably 3 years now. He was a fine pianist, and studying with Horowitz was without a doubt the apex of his life. And he played the same repertoire, and here he is in the Barber Sonata. And it's a very good performance. Oh, a little more turgid, not quite as alive in the crispness, but quite good. Coleman Bloomfield. Now for a performance by the great American pianist John Browning. And it's a live performance from the early career of John Browning. And it's formidable in every way. Notice how certain accents are plucked, a certain kind of sonority he gets. I mean, this is a man that is born for the piano. And I will have to say that I would prefer, I don't know what you say, but I would prefer the John Browning performance of the Barber Fugue.
Thank you.
John Browning is really one of America's great pianists. I hope his name is not forgotten. And let's remember that Barber wrote his piano concerto for Browning, which was the opening of Philharmonic Hall, that was the name of it then, in 1964 at Lincoln Center. This is The Piano Matters. Why not buy a piano? I've said that before, and I really mean it. Go play it yourself. It's a great idea. We need adults to do something special with our hands. After all, the hands are the seat of our humanity. Its evolution is certainly the greatest physical triumph. One can use chopsticks with them and play the piano your favorite tunes upon it. Or you could use the flute or the cello or the piano, whatever pleases you. But the piano is the king of instruments for me. The composer Ernest Bacon wrote, "The piano need bow to no singer. In emulating song, it may surpass song itself, just as Prometheus surpassed the gods in striving for godhood." Let's return to music making and hear the ingenious transcription for two pianos of Liszt's Scherzo Molto Vivace, the second movement from the great Ninth Symphony of Beethoven. It appears that everything Liszt loved, he had to fiercely put to the piano and play it himself. Here is an extraordinary example on two pianos of how he gets in, it seems, everything. Richard and John Cantaguglia are the duo pianists, and they're also identical twins. Let's listen to them in Liszt's transcription for two pianos of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. It's Scherzo. Thank you. Well, of course, we are now very used to hearing the Ninth Symphony in its orchestral garb, but it is so fascinating to listen to what Liszt does in transcribing the scherzo for two pianos from the Ninth Symphony, and played, I think, very well by the Cantagullia brothers. Liszt's pupil Karl Tausig took two Scarlatti sonatas, bonded them, calling them pastoral and capriccio. This twosome was often played, especially in the 19th century. There's a phenomenal recording of it by Joseph Hoffman, which I've previously played for you. But in this program, I have another old recording of the pastoral and capriccio played by Russian-born, French-trained Anya Dorfman. In the 1930s, Dorfman made a group of recordings for Columbia, and they are now reissued for the first time on Pearl. And here she is. Her pianism is very, very fine. Let's listen to the Scarlatti Tausig pastoral and capriccio. Anya Dorfman in Scarlatti Tausig's Pastoral and Capriccio. Remember the Italian proverb, he who plays the piano keeps sane. I've been extolling the merits of the piano, but Ambrose Bierce thought this, saying in his The Devil's Dictionary, piano, a noun, a parlor utensil for subduing the impenitent visitor. It is operated by depressing the keys of the machine and depressing the spirits of the listener. For a comparative performance of the Chopin Etude in C major, Opus 10, number 1, I have Pollini and Novais. First, we shall hear the late Guiomar Novais, the 20th century's most celebrated Brazilian pianist, in the Etude in C major. Just heard the Opus 10, number 1, the C major etude of Chopin, played by Guiomar Novais. It was late in her career when she recorded all 24 etudes, and they are not really her at her absolute best. It's a little sluggish, and we hear also just a bit too much over-pedaling. She was in good shape, but not her real shape. Well, the etude itself is an amazing study of wide extension, as you heard. It was composed when Chopin was 19, and in one full swoop, he negated all other arpeggiation etudes before it. It is, in Honecker's words, new in the senses of figure, design, pattern, web, new in a harmonic sense. Here is the nub of modern piano technique. Let's listen to the same piece played by Maurizio Pollini.
Thank you.
You just heard Pollini in the Opus 10, number one. And I think she outplayed in the sense of technical skill and a certain glitterata and evenness, a certain sparkling exhilaration by Pollini. And I thought it was a better performance all throughout of the Opus 10, number one of Chopin. This is David Dubal. I hope you've had a good week since we last listened together. I wish we could just all get together in some gigantic hall, not a room, and talk piano and pianists. I think the room would be buzzing indeed. In 1839, Honoré de Balzac wrote, "Modern music, a language a thousand times richer than the language of words, is to speech what thought is to utterance. It arouses sensations and ideas in their primitive form, in that part of us where sensation and ideas have their birth, but leaves them as they are in each of us. The power over our innermost being is one of the grandest facts in music." Let's have another comparison of Pollini and Novais of a Chopin study or etude. This time, it's the gorgeous touch etude, Opus 10, number 3 in E major, sometimes, especially in France, called Tristesse, Sadness. Here's an exquisite aria for cantabile playing. A middle section features widely extended and audacious double notes and harmonics that must have sounded cacophonous in 1830. Note Chopin's exquisitely smooth transition back from this cacophony to the great lyric theme. Let's listen to the distinguished Italian player, Maurizio Pollini.
Pollini in a very nice, very smooth, and a little icy in the middle section for me, but I have to hear it again, of the Etude in E Major, Opus 10, number 3. And now we listen to the Brazilian Nightingale, Guiomar Novais. That was the E major etude of Chopin, and I thought Novais really played it with a certain kind of insideness. It was lovely anyway. Why not? Why not? More Chopin to come. And we'll hear the great mazurka in B-flat minor, opus 24, number 4. It's a complicated work, longer than most of the mazurkas, and its form A, first theme, B, A, C, D, A, with a marvelous little coda. And it's one of the finest of the early mazurkas. We'll hear now the late pianist, I think born in Belgium, Michel Bloch. Michel Bloch giving us the Mazurka Opus 24, number 4, in B-flat minor. Won't you join me next week for a new edition of The Piano Matters, same time, same station. The wonderful Henry Thoreau said this, "Men profess to be lovers of music, but for the most part, they give no evidence in their opinions and lives that they have heard it. If they had, it would not leave them narrow-minded and bigoted." This is David Dubal. Thank you for listening. Piano Matters is a production of the Classical Network and is recorded at the offices and studios of the Young People's Chorus of New York City, founder and artistic director Francisco J. Nunez. The producer is Rachel Katz. For a complete playlist, go to wwfm.org and click on Playlist. The Piano Matters is made possible by the support of the listener members of the Classical Network. Become a member at wwfm.org.